when you have great coaches. Then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization, and you tell them one thing. Just win, David.
Go Raider Nation, and welcome to Just Pod Baby with your host, Evan Grote, your home for Raiders news, notes, and information. You can follow me on Twitter at egrote5, and you can check out my work over at silverandblackpride.com. Later on in the show, I'll preview this week's matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs with guest Pete Sweeney, chief editor and lead writer at arrowheadpride.com. We're going to begin the show tonight with some quick headlines. Headline number one, I'm sure you've all heard by now, rookie safety and first-round pick Jonathan Abram tore his rotator cuff and labrum in Monday night's victory over the Denver Broncos. Apparently, the injury happened in the first quarter of the game, but it didn't seem to bother Abram. If you watch the game, he didn't seem to be favoring the shoulder at all. And even after the game, I saw him in post-game press conferences, and he didn't seem to be bothered by the shoulder at all. In fact, he played in 77% of the snaps, so he didn't really miss any time either. Unfortunately, though, Abram will miss the remainder of the season. He was placed on IR today. He had surgery on that shoulder, and it's a major disappointment for many reasons. But Abram really seems like a great kid. He's got great energy, great. He loves the game, and as John Gruden put it on the field, it's a major blow to the defense. Not only, again, is he a good player, but he brings an energy to the team that I believe is just really hard to replace. You can't replace those high energy guys out there. He seems to just bring a certain type of attitude to the team, and he'll be greatly missed. But we do hope for a speedy recovery for him. Speaking of replacements, Paul Gunther would not say yet who would be starting in Abram's spot. He did mention the possibility of kind of seeing a combination of guys such as Eric Harris and Curtis Riley to kind of fill the void. It may not be much of an indicator, but I went back and looked at the snap counts from last week just to kind of see who was getting more time. And Eric Harris didn't play at all. He got zero snaps on defense, while Curtis Riley did play in 37% of the defensive snaps. So take that for what it's worth. Headline number two, the Raiders did sign former Jets cornerback Justin Burris. I don't know a lot about him, to be honest with you. I did some reading here. He's a former 2016 fourth-round pick by the Jets. He played in 34 games with the Jets before being waived in 2018 and joining the Cleveland Browns from the Jets practice squad. He played in four games for the Jets and also played in four games for the Browns last season, primarily saw time on special teams. So, I can't imagine he's going to be a big contributor to the Raiders. He seems like he's more of just kind of filling out the roster. Over his first three seasons with two different teams, the Browns and the Jets, as I mentioned, Burris has appeared in 38 games with two starts, recorded 28 tackles, two interceptions, seven passes defended, and one forced fumble. So, the Raiders brought in a bunch of different guys to work out for them, and apparently they settled on Justin Burris. So we'll see if he contributes at all to the team. Headline number three, it just came out this evening. I saw it on silverandblackpride.com. A.J. Cole was added to the injury report after practice with a foot injury to his kicking foot. So this could be a major, major issue. And because the Raiders don't have a backup punter on the roster, and they will likely need to make a decision on him tomorrow. And so the scenarios that the Raiders are faced with is if they decide to add someone, go out and pick up a free agent, they're going to have to make a roster move. So who did they decide to cut? That's going to be a major problem. Would it be A.J. Cole they decide to cut and take a chance that they could lose him and not get him back? I would prefer that they don't do that. But that's kind of what the Raiders are faced with right now. So keep an eye on the status of A.J. Cole as we get closer to game time on Sunday. J.J. Nelson also was ruled out, and so it's very possible that we see Keelan Doss make his first, get his first action as a pro. Headline number four, on a sad note, former Raider Nerion Ball passed away earlier this week. Ball was a 2015 fifth-round pick out of the University of Florida, and it's been well documented that Ball suffered from a very rare brain condition that he was diagnosed with when he was at Florida. And the condition is called arteriovenous malformation, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but it's also known as AVM for short. And it's a condition in which the brain's blood vessels can get tangled and they can rupture. And it doesn't sound like a very pleasant thing to have. He did have issues with this while he was in college, and he had an emergency surgery that was, but he was able to continue his playing career after the surgery. So apparently he thought maybe he was kind of going to be okay, I guess, but he did suffer a brain aneurysm last December, and he was placed into a medically induced coma, which was later, he was later removed from, but at that point he was still suffering quite badly with without the use of his upper and lower body extremities. He was in a nursing home being cared for, and so it did sound like he was really suffering, and it's just a terrible story. Everything I read on him recently from former teammates and coaches was that he was very well liked, and just overall a great guy. So again, very sad story. Ball was 27. The last piece of news that I do want to mention, it's definitely caught the attention of Raider Nation, is Dolphins safety Minkah Fitzpatrick has requested a trade, and the team has granted him permission to go out to have him and his agent, who Joel Siegel, who we all know is represents Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, but the Dolphins gave him permission to go out and seek a trade with other teams. So obviously, Raider fans and Raider Twitter is blowing up about this. And here's my opinion on the matter. I've been putting some thought into this for most of the evening after I saw this earlier today. And, you know, I would be all for the Raiders making this move, obviously, like most of us would be. But here's some of the reasons why I would be all in favor of this move. The first thought was, you know, what are the Raiders planning on doing with Carl Joseph at the end of the season? As he's on the final year of his rookie deal, they did not pick up his fifth year option. So is he in the long term plans? That's a question that I'm sure it's still up in the air, and I'm hoping, or I figure that. Or I'm assuming that Gruden and Mayock were hoping to see what they could get from Joseph before making a decision on him. But if there's any ounce of doubt in their minds right now that he may not be the answer long term, then I think they would be wise to at least inquire about Fitzpatrick and what it would cost to get him to become a Raider. Minkah, you know, he's only in the second year. He was drafted in 2018. 10th overall, and he's a cheap option at the moment. I saw some of his contract numbers online. They're very, very team friendly. You would have control of him for at least the next four seasons if you included the fifth year option. So that's very enticing, you know, as a fan. I'm sure. You know, I'm not sure the type of money that a player like Carl Joseph would demand on the open market, but it's just something. It's definitely something that the Raiders need to be taking a look at, in my opinion. The second reason I believe that this would be a good move is that Fitzpatrick has that position versatility that makes you more valuable in the league. When you look at a guy like LaMarcus Joyner, who obviously the Raiders feel very strongly about because they went after him in free agency and paid him a lot of money. So you know how Gunther feels about position versatility, and Fitzpatrick is in that same type of mold as a guy like Joyner. The more you can do, the better you're going to be for the team. He has the ability to play both in the slot and at safety. And part of the reason why I was doing some reading on why he wants out of Miami, and part of what I'm reading is he feels like he's being misused. Now, he played three or four different positions in the game on Sunday. They have him playing a little bit of linebacker as well, and he prefers to have more of a solid role, and I believe he prefers to play a little bit more in the slot. So now that could be an issue for the Raiders because Joyner definitely excels more in the slot, but you know, now when you have the injury to Abram, you know, you have a void there, and you have a veteran like Joyner who has experience as a safety. I'm sure he would do what's best for the team if they were to bring in a guy like Fitzpatrick. And the third reason why I think this would be a good move is because, you know, he is young. He's only 22 years old. He's coming off a very promising rookie season. If you recall, he was a top 10 draft pick, and he was considered one of the safest picks in the draft at the time. And I actually went back and did some reading on what Mike Mayock had to say about Fitzpatrick. And let me just pull it up right here real quick if I could find it. Okay, so this is what Mike Mayock had to say about Fitzpatrick leading up to the draft. First of all, he had Fitzpatrick ranked as his number one safety in the class. That's ahead of Derwin James, who's an all-pro. Mayock said he can literally play any position back there. He's got free safety range, and I think he can match slots and tight ends. When you talk to Nick Saban about this kid, Nick Saban lights up. Where are you going to play him so he gets around the football more? So, you know, it's interesting now to now that we know those comments, you look ahead 17 months, and you know, Mayock's got an opportunity now with some draft capital to be in the position to acquire Fitzpatrick's services. So I think it's an interesting situation, and you know, the question that I ask you guys now, the listeners, is how much should the Raiders be offering for a guy like Fitzpatrick? And from the reports that I've read, they are asking for a first-round pick, but they would be willing to consider something lesser, such as a second-round pick or maybe even possibly a third-round pick. So I would assume the Raiders are doing their due diligence on him. Obviously, the Raiders have two first-round picks next year in the 2020 draft, zero second-round picks, and two third-round picks from the Khalil Mack trade. So I personally would be just fine with the Raiders giving up one of those first-round picks. Obviously, I prefer it to be the later of the two, which will most likely be the Bears. I would be fine with that. I really would. I think he's an impact player. You might be going into next year's draft and looking to replace Carl Joseph anyways. If the Raiders should decide to let Joseph go, you're going to have a need there at safety. So you could find yourself in need of a safety. So why not go ahead and secure a high-end talent through a trade that can step right in immediately and help you win this year as well? So that would really make the secondary look very promising for years to come with the young core like Conley, Abram, and Fitzpatrick. So that's my two cents on a potential trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Up next, I'll be previewing this week's matchup with the Kansas City Chiefs with Pete Sweeney of ArrowheadPride.com.
Blue 42! Blue 42, set, hey!
On the line with me is Pete Sweeney. Pete is the chief editor and lead writer at Arrowhead Pride, which is a part of the SB Nation family. Prior to joining SB Nation, Pete spent 3 years as an official team reporter for the Chiefs. Pete is also the host of Arrowhead Pride Radio on 610 AM Sports Radio out there in Kansas City. Pete, thanks for giving me some of your time tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for Sunday. This is a game that Chiefs fans, like Raiders fans, I think look forward to every year, and this is the first of the two installments.
Yeah, and I listen to a lot of national radio, and there seems to be a little bit of a buzz about this game. I see it's going to be the CBS is sending their number one crew, Jim Nance and Tony Romo, to cover it. So it does seem like there is a buzz. I don't know if it has something to do with the Raiders' impressive performance last week. And, of course, we all know the Chiefs are one of the marquee teams in the league. But there's definitely a buzz, and I'm excited for that. Now, the Chiefs and the Raiders are both coming off impressive week one wins, as I mentioned. But both of these wins came at a kind of a cost for each team. We're going to start with your team, the Chiefs, first. Tyreek Hill, who, you know, we all know he suffered that shoulder injury that's expected to sideline him 4 to 6 weeks. Obviously, he's a major part of that Chiefs game plan week to week. With his absence, how do you expect things are going to change for the Chiefs offensively, and who do you expect to be the next man up for them?
Yeah, it's a tough loss. I look at Tyreek Hill, and you guys probably know this well. There really isn't another player like him in the National Football League when it comes to his speed and what he can do. And so with that being said, it's just not a replaceable player per se. The Chiefs can do so many things with him. So I think it'll be a group of guys that have to fill in for what is going to be, you know, a huge loss for the Chiefs. Fortunately for them, Sammy Watkins performed really well last week. He said he's as healthy as he ever has been going into the season. Again, you sometimes think, okay, at training camp, when he says something like that, it's like, oh, well, everybody's in the best shape of their lives. But through 1 week, it surely looked like that. So I think Watkins and Kelce become your main focal points of the offense, Watkins playing what they would call the Z position where Hill would play. And then you have Mecole Hardman, who's the rookie that was really drafted, I think, in a sense at the time to potentially replace Hill if he didn't get out of his off-the-field problems. And he'll be getting more snaps, I think, in a more secondary role. So it's a combination of a couple guys. And the great thing about Andy Reid for Chiefs fans and for the Chiefs is that he really adjusts the game plan to his personnel. So this won't be the same exact game plan as it would be if Tyreek Hill were in the mix. But if you're looking at one guy who's going to get more reps, it's certainly to me the rookie Mecole Hardman.
Now, for the Raiders, their big loss came in the form of their rookie safety, Jonathan Abram, who I'm sure you guys, Chiefs fans, are, you know, have heard about that loss at this time. Abram, he's a big, fast, physical safety. You know, he likes contact. You know, he part of the reason the Raiders drafted him is because they thought he could be a guy that could match up with some of those tight ends in the AFC West like Travis Kelce. It looks like now it's going to be a combination of Eric Harris and Curtis Riley who are going to be used to replace Abram. We know that Kelce has really hurt the Raiders in the past. Do you think this is definitely a matchup that Andy Reid will look to exploit?
Yeah, 100%. If last game against the Jaguars for the Chiefs was the Sammy Watkins game, I think this is a game where Travis Kelce comes a lot more into play. And really, even watching from afar, I'm a huge fan of Hard Knocks. I'm a huge fan of good football players. Such a shame because I was watching that Monday Night Football game, and Jonathan Abram is such a fun player to watch. And it looks like a guy who in the future is just not going to be a player that wide receivers and tight ends want to face. And so, yeah, I think it's a lot bigger, and it probably won't be as notable across the league because I don't think people realize yet just how good he's going to be. But in this particular game, it opens it up for Travis Kelce, where you do have the receivers kind of opening it up. I mean, Watkins and Hardman, as I had mentioned, they're both 4.3 speed, so they can open things up in the middle for Travis Kelce. And again, Kelce is just such a hard person to match up with. He had off-season ankle surgery, and he's feeling a lot better on his feet. And again, after a weekend where he didn't see as much action as I think he likes, I think he rebounds and has a big day against the Raiders.
Now, another player on that offense that I want to talk about briefly is LeSean McCoy. And so he was released by the Bills before the start of the season. He signed with the Chiefs, and we know about his history with Andy Reid. And I was looking at some of the numbers from last week, and I did see that the attempts were nearly 50-50 between him and the starter, yeah, Damian Williams. I did see that Williams did catch six balls to McCoy's one, but do you expect this kind of workload to be similar going forward, you know, in particular this week? But how do you see the time split between McCoy and Williams?
Last week, LeSean McCoy had just gotten there, and it's really tough to get Andy Reid's playbook down because it's so vast and complex, and so they got him in for 18 plays. What I thought was a noticeable thing that is a little bit under-talked about is, and it was only slightly, McCoy was in for more run plays than pass plays, and that was the opposite for Damian Williams. And so I think maybe the Chiefs see McCoy as a better threat to be a runner, whereas they look at Damian Williams as a pass catcher. Not that that necessarily is going to be an exact tell, but I think that's just what they feel. So I think by the end of the year, you're seeing LeSean McCoy certainly get more carries. I'm not even necessarily sure if he gets more touches, because Williams will get carries and probably a few more passes, because I think the Chiefs like him a little bit more in the pass game. But as far as rushing the football, I don't think anything that the Chiefs had before they had McCoy compares to his vision. And so I think that's what Andy Reid really likes. He still has it. And what helps is that the Chiefs offense is so explosive. So with a Buffalo Bills offense, I mean, you're getting to a point where McCoy is going to be focused on by defenses when you already have Watkins and Kelsey, and eventually when Hill gets back and Hardman and even Damian Williams, if you put them both at the same time, really opens things up a little bit more for McCoy, who in his old age at 31, I think still has some burst. And yeah, I think what you do see is a 50-50 split between these guys.
Pete Sweeney on the line with me, chief editor and lead writer at Arrowhead Pride. Now, I was looking at the injury reports a little bit today. I saw they were released just a few minutes ago, actually, before we began this interview. And I did see some names like Patrick Mahomes on there with an ankle, and Frank Clark with a neck, Tyrann Mathieu with a shoulder. They all practiced in full today. And someone that I saw pop up today also was Jake Fisher. I heard he was injured at practice with a groin. Do you have an update on any of these guys? You know, do you fully expect them all to play, or what do you have to say about that?
The two players that stick out on the injury report to me are Patrick Mahomes. Badly messed up his ankle, sprained ankle last weekend, and it really did impact his mobility. And as practice went on this week, he looked better and better, but I just don't think it'll be 100% on Sunday. And so what that means to me is some of those things that he does out of structure, not in the play, it's going to be a little bit limited. And where it does worry me is if the Raiders can get to him early, I just wonder if it gets to be injured again, or if it, you know, lowers the percentage on that. So I do have some worries when it comes to Mahomes and his effectiveness. I think he's still going to be a good quarterback, and he's excellent out of the pocket. I just don't know if we're going to see that MVP version if he can't do some of the things like rolling out to his right and left. And then Eric Fisher, the left tackle for the Chiefs, he popped up late, injured his groin, had to be removed from practice. He's questionable. I'm wondering if they're just waiting to see how sore it is on Sunday. If he can't go, probably be Cam Irving that goes at left tackle. There's a number of things the Chiefs can do. They could move their right tackle, Mitch Schwartz, over to left tackle. But I think the most likely scenario is Cam Irving would go. If I'm guessing right now, I'd say that Fisher goes. I was in the locker room today, and he was all smiles and kind of joking around with teammates. Not really the look of a guy who's about to miss a game.
Okay, very good. I want to shift gears a little bit now to the defensive side of the ball. There's a lot of new faces for that Chiefs defense, including a new coordinator in Steve Spagnuolo. It's only been one game, but you know what have you seen from them through training camp and through one game? How would you assess this defense to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it was a big weakness for the Chiefs last year, and a lot of people say it's why they didn't win the Super Bowl, and it's hard to argue with that. And so what they did was completely revamped this offseason, changed defensive coordinators and schemes, 3-4 to the 4-3, Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu suddenly in the mix, Justin Houston, D Ford, Eric Berry gone. And so, yeah, it feels completely different. As far as their performance week one, I thought it was similar to last year. It wasn't great. It wasn't really good. It was okay. They weren't a reason that they lost the football game, but they didn't really feel like they were a reason that they won it. And I think about preseason, because of some injuries and things like that, this defense had about two snaps altogether with the starters during the preseason. So I just wonder if they need to just get that rapport down a little bit and get used to what Spagnuolo is doing. The game plan seemed a little vanilla week one, so you wonder if there's some more disguises and blitzes, packages and zones and man, and just a little bit more of a mix this week against the Raiders, and you see more of a mix as things go on. But Frank Clark didn't really have a great game. Matthew, you know, wasn't really standing out, at least in week one. And to me, I sort of look at it as a rebound week against the Raiders team, who looked really, really good on Monday night.
Now, are you at all concerned? You know, they once Nick Foles was injured last week, they were facing a rookie quarterback in Minshew there. Are you concerned at all? He was quite good last week. Is that something that would concern you as they face, I would say, a better, you know, offense and a better quarterback in Derek Carr?
Yeah, I mean, because to me, I felt like Monday night watching Derek Carr reminded me of the 2016 version. It's really efficient. And the one that led, it was like 13-3 record, 12-4, whatever it was, and 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He looked really good, and he was playing really confident. And you could tell he has really a lot of confidence in Tyrell Williams. And Darren Waller, to me, looks like he's going to be a top 10 tight end. And he was doing things that kind of kill the Chiefs, which is quarterbacks who get rid of the ball quickly and don't allow Chris Jones and guys like Frank Clark and Emmanuel Ogba, Alex Okafor to get to the quarterback. And where the Chiefs struggle is coverage. And when, you know, with Tyrell Williams running and Waller's obviously a matchup problem, similar in a sense to Travis Kelce. I'm not ready to call him in that Kelce caliber quite yet, but he's certainly someone that the Chiefs are going to have to deal with. Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a thing where the Raiders are could come out, and I like if they started with the ball, I wouldn't be shocked if they started out with a 7-0 lead. I think it isn't going to be one of these games that is just easy for the Chiefs, like it was for the Jaguars, where they just kind of rolled over them.
Now, speaking of Derek Carr, and you touched upon this briefly just now in that answer, I listened to some of the Chiefs press conferences, and I heard a little bit of what Steve Spagnuolo had to say about Derek Carr and how he likes to get the ball off his hand quickly. What are you hearing from the coaches, how they plan to, you know, defend a quarterback like Carr who likes to get the ball out pretty quick?
Yeah, it's just coverage. I mean, it's tackling quickly, wrapping up, you know, making sure you don't get beat deep. The good thing about a quarterback that gets rid of it quickly is a lot of times it's right in front of you and you just got to make the tackle. And that seems like the emphasis this week is they got to cover better. And it's just questionable because the Chiefs cornerbacks should, I mean, it's hard. It's tough to say, but they just aren't great. I mean, it's Kendall Fuller, Bashaud Breeland, and Charvarius Ward seems like the guy that everybody seems to be picking on. And I can imagine that they're going to try to get some favorable matchups, like a guy who's coming off a big week, like Williams. If he's matched up against Ward, I think that is certainly the area you should focus your eyes if you're a Raiders fan, because that's what they're going to be trying to take advantage of.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that was a great segue there to my next question, but you already answered it. So you think definitely Tyrell Williams is a difficult matchup for those Chiefs corners.
I do. The Chiefs, I mean, even in the Alex Smith days, in the past 5 years, they just seem to always struggle with these top tier either running backs and wide receivers. Like, you know, you're asking me to put a bet on it, I would bet that Williams has a big day, like in the 80 to 100 yard range at least. It's just whether the offense, which has been able to since Mahomes has taken over, just puts teams out of games, you know, like, because the defense we know is going to give up points. It's just a matter of are the Chiefs already up 17-10 or 17-7 because they've been able to put up more before that. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I keep reiterating, I just don't think this is going to be one of these easy wins for the Chiefs, especially it being this emotional big game, the last game in Oakland.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, there's something different about the feel of this team right now. And if they could pull off this upset, it would be huge for Oakland, that's for sure. Two more questions for you. Colton Miller and Trent Brown, they did a great job last week against the Broncos pass rush of Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. This week you mentioned it's Emmanuel Ogba, it's Frank Clark. But I do think the one matchup that is being a bit overlooked that the Raiders could struggle with is inside with Chris Jones. As you know, both of the Raiders starting guards, Richie Incognito and Gabe Jackson, are out. So what do you think? Is this a game where you think Chris Jones could maybe have a major impact?
There was a feeling with the Chris Jones contract situation and the holdout through the offseason that he did quite a bit of freelancing last year, meaning he was going for sacks on a lot of plays and not necessarily sticking to what he was supposed to be doing on certain fits and so on and so forth. And so I wonder if Spagnuolo was reining that in. He didn't really look as effective as he did last year at getting to the quarterback. Now, when I look at the matchup, I mean, Chris Jones, to me, last year he finished third in the league in sacks. He's a force to be reckoned with. And so Spagnuolo may see that matchup and tap into it. I think that's probably more the likely scenario. So, yeah, I mean, I do worry about, for the Raiders' sake, Jones really having one of these dominant games, and it makes it easier when you have a guy like Frank Clark. And I understand Clark didn't have a huge week last week against the Jaguars, but Colt Miller is a matchup he likes. I did some reading myself, and I found out Miller was facing some injuries the last time, so you know that he's going to want to prove it to himself. He did a nice job against Bradley Chubb with chop blocks, and that was something I asked about this week with Frank Clark, and Clark seems ready for him. He said that was something that he saw on film, and he's going to stick to his game. And so that's a big matchup. I'm excited to watch the defensive line against this Raiders offensive line.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the matchups that I'm going to be focusing on throughout the game is how Colton Miller handles Frank Clark, because, as you mentioned, they did play Seattle. The Raiders did play Seattle last year, and, man, Clark really dominated him, and it was ugly. So I'm hoping to see a different version of Colton Miller this weekend. Now, final question here. The Chiefs, the last time I looked, they were 8-point favorites, I believe. I would just like to get your prediction for the game, that's all.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, this is kind of how I think it's going to break down. I think it's going to really be this shootout type of thing from the get-go. I think it's going to be one of these games where, you know, if you're not in it like us nationally, you're probably going to assume that the Chiefs are just going to run over the Raiders because of Patrick Mahomes. But if you really look at deeper, the Chiefs don't have Tyreek Hill. Patrick Mahomes is facing that ankle injury. The defense didn't look great week one, so I don't necessarily know if the Chiefs have it all together quite yet. And Derek Carr looked really good. And if the Chiefs defense wasn't looking good and Derek Carr is looking really good, I think they're going to be neck and neck. I think through two quarters, it's going to feel like a shootout. It may even be tied at halftime, but I do think the Chiefs go into the locker room and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid figure this thing out, and then they sort of pull away from the third. I do have the Chiefs covering, but not by much. My final's 37-27 Chiefs. But like I said, I mean, from a Raiders standpoint, they're going to prove something to themselves in this game. It's a young team, and if they can stick with the Chiefs even for a little bit, I think that's a win in Oakland's mind. Granted, I understand Oakland fans, and they're not going to be satisfied if they lose their last game in Oakland. But that being said, this team, to me, Raiders team, just in general, feels like it's 1 year away from being one that's going to contend right with the Chiefs because of just how young they are. It's going to be fun to watch over the next few years, but even in this game early on, it's something I'm looking forward to watching.
There's no moral victories in the NFL, Pete. Come on, you know that. We want the Raiders fans, we want a victory. We want to beat the Chiefs. It's been too long.
Yeah, of course. No, I see that, and the Raiders are one of those teams, too, that has able to get a division win against the Chiefs, who have been really good in the division the past couple of years. The 0-10 team comes to mind, and then the 7 plays at the end of the game. So, whenever the Chiefs and Raiders get together, I say this with all sports in division, you never know what's going to happen, and I feel that way about Sunday.
Yeah, well, that was great stuff there, Pete. I appreciate you, hopping on the line with me tonight. I encourage everyone, if there's any Chiefs fans that happen to be listening out there, check them out on Arrowhead Pride, SB Nation. Want to support the family there. Pete, enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, sounds good, and I hope you and all your fans will also enjoy the game, and have a good Sunday.
All right, thank you. All right, you got some good information there from Chiefs beat writer Pete Sweeney. I want to thank Pete again for joining me on the show. Unfortunately, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Just Pod Baby with Evan Grote. Like always, you can check it out on part of the Silver and Black Pride Podcast Network. Raider fans, we've got a big game this weekend. I hope everyone enjoys it. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the show tonight. I hope everyone has a great week. I hope everyone has a super Sunday. And go Raiders!